wrapping the kids out of their coats, the way the babies haven't been born. Oh, 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 oh. Unpacking the bags and setting up, and planted lilacs and buttercups. Oh, 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 oh. But in the meantime, I got it hard. Second floor living without a yard. Maybe years until the day my dreams will match up with my pay.
Oh. All right, Jamie, so today we have a guest with us.
We do. We have a special friend. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Mark. I've been teaching for 27 years. I spent 4 years as an administrator, and I consider myself a recovering administrator because teaching is way more fun.
Nice. And you teach biology, right?
I teach bio and anatomy and physiology.
Oh, awesome. That's good excellent. For us to have a science perspective because we're always on the humanities side.
Well, you know,
sometimes we talk about math.
There's an art form to science, too. I just don't think it's as separate as you'd think.
No, I would agree. I always say to myself, I wish I had realized how cool science was when I was younger. Maybe I would have gone the science route, but I wasn't cool enough yet.
I like sciences, but I'm often made fun of by my husband, who's has a biochemistry degree, that my environmental studies degree doesn't count as real science.
Well,
it does.
It's what it is.
Yeah. So you might agree with that, too.
I'm not so judgmental. No, look, my daughter started out as an environmental science major and decided to change to biology because she thought it was a little too foofy.
It's a little foofy. I like that word. Good usage.
Nice.
So Mark actually listens to our podcast, which is really exciting. And when we were talking about dress code 2 weeks ago, Mark and I sat down and had a conversation. And then we decided, why not just be on the podcast with us?
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
I mean, one reason why I think, I just heard like secondhand, we definitely brought up what the male perspective must be like when you're a teacher and you have a dress code. And a lot of times those dress code violations are about female students and what they should or should not be wearing according to this dress code. And we just wanted to know kind of what was your perspective on enforcing it or just a dress code in general and how you feel as a male teacher when you have to make a decision about that.
Well, I guess there's a couple different angles to take. One is how I feel about dress code.
Yeah, let's start with that.
So we might as well go there. I think with dress codes, it kind of depends on why you have one. You know, I've never actually heard an administrator in our district say the dress code exists because we don't want kids distracted by body parts poking out that shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's an assumption I think that's made, but my take on it is if you're going to have a dress code, have a rationale that makes some sense. Not trusting kids to be able to keep focused on school because what somebody's wearing sells kids short.
Right.
Right. It also puts teachers in a position where we are now, you know, what I affectionately used to call the boob and butt police, you know, where, you know, our job is to be looking at the last place the kids want us to be looking.
Right.
It doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. Now, if you're taking an angle that dress codes are to provide in a working environment that would be what you would expect in the, big bad world that they're about ready to go into, that's cool. I could see that. I just never really heard a clear rationale. You read, the policy statements, dress code's there, but there's no backstory.
Do you think that if an admin or a teacher explained it to a student like that, then there would be more acceptance in complying with it?
Oh, I'd almost bet on it. You know, kids are people. I mean, sometimes we forget that as teachers that, granted they're young, but they still do have a sense of the rational, right? And if you treat them as adults and have a rational conversation, more often than not, they can kind of come around to, okay, now I kind of see where you're coming from. But I mean, I get a lot of frustration with the whole thing too. I mean, there's selective enforcement. Mm-hmm. I personally have no problem talking to guys or girls about what they wear. I mean, maybe it's because I'm a dad that's gone through the teenage daughter thing, or, the fact that I had some experience as an administrator and had to deal with those conversations more or less. And actually, where I came from, our dress code was far more restrictive than what we're dealing with.
Yeah. What are some things that you feel like maybe you do feel comfortable enforcing or things that you think are important and how do you articulate that versus the things that you think are maybe targeting specific populations?
I've kind of lived that end of things too. I think when I first started in the district, I mean, this is 20 plus years ago, the first dress code part started with colors, and that was really gang related stuff, which, you know, made some sense. And they've actually softened their stance since I've come back to the district. Mm-hmm. Used to be you couldn't wear any red or any blue. Now you're allowed at least one article of clothing. But what frustrated me previously is that if you're a white kid running around with red clothes, you don't get harassed. You're a dark-skinned kid, and you are all of a sudden you're a gangbanger, which, you know, again, it's making assumptions about people without actually getting to know them kind of bugs me.
Right.
But, you know,
also,
in terms...
don't we have something about, like, Sharks jerseys? You can't wear those.
You know, I don't know. I'd have to...
At one time, that was true.
Yeah, I think that's true. Oh, yeah, well, and then you had the UNLV hats. I mean, they, you know, kids aren't stupid. If you're in a gang and you're using colors, you're going to find some way to flash them, whether an adult is telling you you can't do it or not. I mean, that's just, you know, they're not dumb. But, you know, when you look at me, I mean, I don't have a problem talking with girls about things, or guys. I mean, I've had guys show up with those shirts cut down to their, you know, all the way down the sides. It's like, look, double standards are all over the place. I'm really not in the mood to be playing with that. So look, you know, wear something appropriate, put on a shirt, whatever. I don't really like to feed kids the administration of something as stupid as clothing. You know?
Do you feel like you're an enforcer though, on a regular basis? Are you the teacher that...
I'm gentle about it.
Okay.
So I'm the teacher that will come in and will gently rib a kid saying, hey, nice abdomen. And they, you know, and the hands immediately go and pull the shirt down. I mean, they know what the heck is going on. They're not, you know, again, they get it. And it's, am I going to lose my lunch over the fact that some kid's got, you know, a little bit of skin showing here or there? Not really. As long as you're doing your job in my classroom, I'm good.
Do you think, do you feel ever, like, you said that as the father of daughters, that you have some experience kind of probably having the conversation with them. Do you feel like, how do you think that translates to then being a male teacher talking to female students sometimes?
I don't know. I mean, you're in my classroom long enough, you get to feel that I'm pretty, I don't know, relatively fearless about what I'll discuss.
Okay.
I don't get embarrassed easily.
Well, you're a bio teacher, so probably that helps.
And, you know, the worst part was try teaching your daughter anatomy and physiology and do a sex ed unit. Yeah.
Oh, you had her as a student?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother, episode.
In a class of 12 kids.
Oh, wow.
I spent some time. The private school I taught at was very, very small. We had, you know, 150 kids total, and the average class size is about 12 to 1. So, you know, it's... Coming back into public school has actually been a bit of a... It took me... The first year was like, oh, wow, yeah, I remember what 36 kids feels like in a class.
Sure.
But
very different dynamic.
Yeah.
So how many years were you in private school for?
I left our district in 2004, and I came back 3 years ago, so 9 years, I think.
Oh, nine.
So you did teaching first and then training.
Oh, heck yeah. I had no intention of being an administrator. That happened completely by accident. And it basically works that, you know, I'm the kind of person that I'm not a big fan of people who complain and don't do anything, right? So if I see a problem, I will tend to try to fix it. And
take the solutions approach.
And as it turned out, in a small private school, when you fire a principal and a new head of school comes in, they go, oh, who fixes things?
Mm-hmm.
How would you like, and that was kind of, you know, how would you like to be principal? It's like, oh, wonderful. And I was actually a little coy at first. I said, is no an alternative? And the new head of school said, well, I'd be very disappointed. I'm like, okay, I guess we can do this.
But you were in a unique position, right?
Oh,
you taught two at the same time that you were principaling.
I would have gone nuts if I only administrated.
What was it? Why? Tell us about that.
Okay. There's a difference in the types of relationships you have when you're administrating. I mean, how do I put this in gentle terms? It's kind of like living on the bottom story of a two-story outhouse.
Oh, God.
Okay. Because you have parents that come to complain to you about whatever. You have teachers that complain about everything, including you, which is always entertaining. And then you have kids that complain about things and then you have to deal with. So it's like you're constantly kind of trapped in the middle of a bit of a storm of not so pleasant stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a different relationship you have with your kids, right? You know, when you're a teacher, there's their day-to-day aspect of not just teaching the material, but getting to know kids in a way that is somewhat meaningful. I mean, it's a lot easier when you have 12 kids, granted, than 36.
Yeah.
But as an admin, you have to. There are times where you literally have to do or say things that you really don't want to, but it's part of your job, right?
Yeah.
You have an agreement with your board that this is the way things work, and yeah, you know, you have to be the face of the institution, which is not something you always have to do as a teacher. You can choose to, but you don't necessarily have to.
Yeah, there's more of a maybe political element, you could say.
Yeah.
I
mean, you know, I guess the upside, though, of being, you know, spending some time as an administrator is I am fearless when it comes to parents now. There is nothing they can throw at me I haven't seen, heard, or dealt with.
Well, that's nice, because I've had some tough weeks with the parents.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, from the administrator side, I think, the part that I would not want to have to deal with all the time. I think of all the stakeholders.
It's terrible.
I think they're doing, you know, most of the time parents are great, but the difficult ones are probably not the reason why you become a teacher.
No, but again, I think a big piece of that is, you know, trying to figure out what they really want.
Yeah.
And getting them to articulate. If you can work them to a point to where they can really tell you what they want, then you can parrot that back to them and act, kind of an active listening sort of thing and say, look, you know, let me tell you what I think you're telling me. And once a parent knows that you've really heard them, then you can be honest about, look, these are things I can do and these are things I can't do. More often than that's enough. But, yeah, you're going to come across some that, you know, you're not going to – you can't fix it.
Just like kids, right? You can't win them all.
That's right. You can't
win
them all.
Most of them are doing okay.
And, you know, I think it's one of the harder things in teaching is learning. I'm still working on the letting go of the stuff I don't have control over. You know,
both of us really struggle with that.
That's a hard one. I mean, it's extremely difficult. I'm, you know, 27 years in and I still have problems really adjusting to that. I mean, you should have been around me the last couple of years during evaluation, and you know, come in and do their shtick, and you know, it was, and they'd send you this nice little note that the first, you know, two paragraphs are this wonderful stuff that's happening in your classroom, and they have to end with the but, and then they whack you with some zinger, and how not to just want to go blow your gasket, you know.
Yeah.
My, you know, the baser instincts are okay. They have four tires and I have a knife.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's really refreshing for us, everyone at a different stage in their teaching career, to hear, because I think that when you really care about teaching, it's hard to let that stuff go. You know, both like the things that are happening in your classroom that don't go the way you want, and maybe something like an evaluation, it can be difficult to let it go. And I think sometimes when you're where we are, kind of like, you know, you're past the phase where it's like, are you going to make it? But you're definitely not, you know, you don't have 10 years under your belt or 20 years under your belt. You sometimes wonder, like, am I ever going to let this stuff go?
Yeah.
Is it always going to nag me? Like, what's wrong with me? So,
but also when I was having a really bad week, was it 3 weeks ago now? And you just randomly came into my classroom. It's also remembering that, like, when you stop caring, and that's when you have a problem.
Yeah.
Oh,
and so it's
no
the balance
argument
of
that.
Like caring too much or not caring enough, and like whether you actually should stay and be a teacher.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Well, I can tell you, walking away from teaching for a while will do one of two things. It'll either make you make a decision saying, yep, teaching was definitely not the right thing for me, or you're going to figure out pretty quickly that teaching is the thing for you. And that's why I'm totally digging coming to work every day. Even when I have a crappy day, I know there'll be other ones that aren't so crappy, you know.
Yeah.
And I live for it. I literally have not been as happy in years. It's awesome.
I think that also I would say you're a little more easygoing, your personality, than I am. Which, like, sometimes I try to channel you and, like, think, okay, well, how can I deal with this situation and try to let it roll off me a little better and just smile through it?
That's because you don't know what the evil little hamster in my head is doing at that time where I look calm.
that's where we want to get you at. We don't... We don't want to give in to letting the evil hamster come out.
play poker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's all about poker face.
A little bit about grade inflation.
It's not just grade inflation, it's just what the heck makes really, you know, what makes good grades in the first place. It's one of those things where you're dealing with kids and, you know, as a teacher trying to figure out what really is a valid measure of what a kid knows, right? And yeah. You know, I know what I hated as a student. I think that's the funniest part actually sometimes about me choosing teaching as a profession, because I hated high school with a passion. You know, I liked...
But what part did you hate? Did you like the learning part, or did you hate the social part?
Well, the social part I could negotiate. I mean, you know, I didn't really like the popular crowd too much, although it was fun to torture them for kicks and giggles. I wish I had the internet back then. It would have been so much more fun.
Oh, my God.
I'm so thankful every day that Facebook wasn't around when I was in high school.
Well, me too, because I'm pretty sure that if they had a record of half the things I did, there's statute of limitations on some of it.
Sure, yeah.
What I didn't like is I didn't like hoop jumping. I was really bad at it.
Yeah.
So if I had teachers that would give me mind-numbing work, like, here's 150 words to memorize and write a vocabulary list and turn in your vocabulary list. I was a kid who would never turn in his vocabulary list, but turn around and get an A on the test.
Yeah.
And then the teacher would sit there at the end of a semester and say, well, you get a C in the course. And I said, well, I have every single assessment you've given me, I have done well on, correct? Yes. I just didn't turn in, you know, the other stuff. Well, the other stuff matters because you're going to have a job and you're going to have to do other stuff. And see, for me, that was just an absolute. The minute a teacher went to a place that didn't make sense to me as a kid, it was like I turned you off. Mm-hmm. And then I would spend time trying to figure out how to amuse myself in class, which rarely was good for a teacher.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you say that perspective, because I always find, as a teacher of writing and reading, I feel like I'm primarily giving them things that are, you know, like, I don't do, like, the memorized vocab kind of a thing. I don't do things that are memorization, generally. I'm almost always doing something that is skills-based.
Awesome.
Or that I think will translate to college or career. But I find sometimes that when I'm working with, a population that's maybe super motivated for college but less motivated in the subject matter, that they actually sometimes, I think, resent the fact that I'm not giving them things that are those easy points.
Yeah.
Good for you.
And that's where I think the grade inflation on my end comes in, that where I say they don't like it, because when it really is all about their writing and their reading and how they're doing on it, sometimes they're not getting that easy A or B, and that's shocking to them.
Well, that's good. There should be more of you around.
Well, I don't know how they always feel that way.
Well, I tell you that, you know, think about your own, you know, think about your own past. Which teachers do you remember from school?
I mean, I usually remember teachers where I learned something about social justice or the world in English, where I read something that was connected to, like, life around me. I don't really remember, like, but I wasn't a point grubber.
You know? I bet you also remember. I bet you also remember the teachers that were jerks too.
Yeah, sure.
It's one of those things, right? We tend to focus on, you know, two things: the teachers that touched us in some way, not in a real physical way. That would be bad. But got to be careful how you phrase things. Language is important.
Yeah, very important.
But.
Or the teachers that were totally inappropriate or jerks or...
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so for me, you know, the classes I really did well in high school in were, you know, classes I was really interested in, because it really didn't matter who was teaching it. I'd go learn the material anyway.
Yeah.
Or the classes where a teacher made some sort of real effort to connect either me to the real world or made me feel like I was important in some way, you know, those kind of teachers. And so when I, you know, decided to teach high school... You know, I try to bring that to the classroom. You know, I don't want to blow smoke up kids' rear ends. It doesn't make sense to do that.
No, I think that having a realistic teacher is fantastic. And I mean, sadly, all of our students gossip about us. And if you're if you're a good teacher, if you try to be a good teacher, you either don't listen or you redirect them and say, you know, like, these are my colleagues, please take the conversation elsewhere. I don't want to hear about it. But honestly, I can say that your name has never once come up in a negative light.
That's good.
It's always, it always comes up in ways that are like, he totally inspired me.
Or like, oh my God, physiology. Like, I hear some of the kids like naming, like pointing and naming body parts and like going through it. And I'm like,
And naming body parts. Here we are back at that subject.
So like,
it's a very egocentric experience for the kids. Yeah. That's one of the nice things about that class, because it's an entire year about them.
Their favorite subject.
I've never taken an anatomy or a physiology class.
Oh, I loved it.
Did you? High school you took it? Wow.
I thought it was really interesting.
That was one of my favorite classes in high school.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, they have nothing but, like, really positive and, like, always something about your content, never something about, like, you as a person, which for me is a really good indicator that, like, that man is doing a good job. Like, I've never been in your classroom to see you teach, but...
Tell that to my boss.
Right. We'll just forward this.
You didn't do EDI properly.
Yeah, well, something tells me that they're not going to remember the EDI teachers either.
You'd think.
Yeah. So are you experiencing on your end now as the teacher, you know, some sort of grade inflation, something to do with grade inflation that
it's up? Yeah, I mean, it, you know, again, it gets back to kids who have a very warped view of their capabilities, I guess might be a way of putting it. I get students
like
that,
a positive or a negative
view. Some of both, really. I put a lot of effort into not only working with the students but especially working with the parents, that it's, I'm focused on the learning here. I don't really the grades eventually will figure themselves out. I'm not, you know, I don't do extra credit. I don't, you know, extra credit implies that you've gone beyond the course. Well, if you don't have 100%, you haven't gone beyond the course yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of mercy in there. I think where a grade inflate is on the bottom end. Mm-hmm. So I don't make it particularly difficult to survive the class with a C.
Yeah.
But if you want an A or a B, that's a different puppy. It's not going to be the mechanics of doing school. You're going to have to show me that you understand this material, and the primary way of doing that's through, you know, writing lab reports and you know, how you assess. Right.
But you get a lot of pushback, like, I need to go to college and I can't go to college if I get a B. These aren't accepted. Or do you not get those kids?
No, come on, I teach AP. Right. You know, I get the kids that, oh my God, you know, that was the shock for me when I got to the school I'm working at, right? You know, a kid comes up to me and says, I've got an A minus and my parents are about ready to kill me. I said, what's wrong with an A minus? And this kid, you know, shut full says, well, it's an Asian F.
Oh my God.
I'm like, a what?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had no clue. I said, a Jewish F in my house was a C.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, just kind of threw me a little bit. But again, it gets back to, I try to build a grading system that's pretty balance. So when I'm looking at the kid at the end of a semester, although my final has a 20% weight, I use as an adjustment. So I break my final up into units, and I will compare performance on final on a unit to like a unit exam where a kid might not have gotten it. And if there is a significant discrepancy and it's in the student's favor, I'll bend the grade upward a little bit, because the bottom line for me is, you know, show me you know this stuff.
Yeah.
And if you do it the first time, that's awesome. But if you wait and you screw it up and you figure it out and show me later, I don't see why that shouldn't be just as valid as saying to a kid, you know, I'm going to teach you how to tie your shoes. And the first few times you do it, you're going to screw it up. But eventually you've got it wired. So now that you know how to tie your shoes really well, am I going to say you don't know how to tie them? It doesn't, you know, I don't. That's where I have a problem with grading systems is that they kind of punish in a way, and they promote things like, you know, the grade grubbing thing. I'm looking for points. I'm focused on the points. I'm focused on the points. And my favorite conversation happens once or twice a year, and then the kids talk and it never happens again, is a kid will walk in after the first exam and say, how do I get an A? I'll say 93%. End of conversation.
Yeah.
Right? And they look at me kind of cross-eyed and said, and then they kind of, you know, the awkward pause. I said, now, if you have an issue with you didn't understand something, that's a conversation I'll have with you anytime you want.
Right.
Yeah.
Come to me with that.
Yeah.
But
you know,
you also have, you're fortunate in the classes you teach that you have a lot of, I feel like maybe I can't call it mature, but you teach mostly juniors and seniors.
Oh, there's an absolute perk to that.
And so you have that kind of maturity in those students, whereas
at least you can expect it and tell them, oh, if you're going to college in 2 years, this is something you better step your game up with.
So I have a lot of grade grubbing in my class, and surprisingly, it mostly comes from young women who are a little aggressive with me about wanting to raise their grades.
That's interesting.
They're a little scary.
I've had a lot of parent pushback this year from anything that's a C. I've had quite a few, and I've seen an uptick in it this year, but just if it's not a B or an A, it's not good enough for college. Therefore, what are they doing wrong is a lot of the time what I'm getting. And sadly, a lot of the time what I'm sending back is they're just averagely performing. You know, they're performing at very basic standard and not really doing much more. And to them, I think that's where the grade inflation comes back, is this idea that, well, if they're showing up and just doing it, they should be getting a B. And I'm like, well, that's not what a B used to mean to me.
Right.
And certainly not what my rubrics align to. So I'm I see that a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also, a couple weeks ago, I asked my students, would you prefer it if at the end of the year, instead of getting a letter grade, you got a narrative where I wrote something, a paragraph about you, about your positives in terms of the skills, the areas of growth you needed to work on, you know, what are your ethics, what is your attitude, what is your interest level, just something that tells you more about who that kid is, and that's something that could really reflect what you're talking about, which is proficiency, growth over time.
Yeah.
A lot of them said yes, or a lot of them said they'd want both, you know, a grade and the narrative. But the kids that don't want the narrative are the kids that just care about the points.
And that's right.
So it's kind of interesting when you put that back on them. Some of them have never even considered that. And I say to them, well, that's really more reflective of something. If we're going to go into the real world conversation, that's really more reflective of what you're going to get from a professor that's giving you a recommendation or an employer that is passing you on for a promotion.
Yeah. You know, actually, Mark, we have a colleague, and I'll tell you who it is later, who in her high school experience at a small school in Vermont had only narrative grades.
Oh, that sounds very small school Vermont.
And and so when she was applying to colleges, they had to, like, somehow make up a grade for that narrative that they had given her.
Oh, wow.
And it's really you should go talk to her about them, because I was fascinated when she told me.
Look, I started UC Santa Cruz, so then
you did the same thing.
Yeah, I was right at the last couple of years where it was only narratives, and then it was slowly transitioning into grades. Uh-huh. And again, it was primarily being driven by, I think, an incorrect assumption that people needed to have GPAs to get into grad school. Yeah. You know, my brother seemed to do just fine getting, you know, 99 percentile somewhere on the MCATs and go to med school with nothing but narratives.
Right.
You know, the downside of narratives, though, is it gets back to workload. And I think, you know, sometimes the grading systems that we're playing around with, how we choose to assess our kids, mm-hmm. has more to do with our own survival than we're really in the best interest of students and learning.
Sure.
You know, here's 120 multiple choice question final. I'm going to go hit the Scantron at the end of school. Boom, boom, boom. Yep. Go have a beer.
Right.
You know, versus I'm going to have all 165 of my students write an essay, and now I'm going to go spend the next, all of winter break, grading them. So, you know, I get the survival piece of that.
Yeah.
It's just, I'd love to figure out a way to get better balance.
Yeah, balance.
With that.
Well, I mean, smaller class sizes, team teaching.
Be nice.
All the idealistic stuff,
yes.
Right?
And as someone who has had a team teaching experience, like my first year, I would say that if I could replicate that with different students, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Well, yeah, and that was kind of the advantage of working at a small, you know, when I was working at a small school, it was kind of a plus minus, right? I had very small class sizes, but I was the only one teaching my subject.
Yeah.
So I could have a meeting with myself, which I'm sure would be very entertaining. But, you know, I missed, that was the one thing coming back into a bigger school. I didn't realize how much I missed working with other teachers that teach the same thing I did.
I think I've mentioned several times that over the past 2 years, this is the first time in my 6 years of teaching that I've had a team of consistently, there are four of us that work together. We communicate pretty much every single day about what we're doing in our classrooms. And we're definitely not lockstep, but each person brought a unit to the table. And so like the entire first semester is a rotation of things that we've done throughout the past, I don't know, some of us have been teaching for 20 years, and then there's a newer person who's been doing it for 3. And so every person plays a role. And it's nice because the person who doesn't have as much content area knowledge for my freshman course, he looks at it and revises, like, hey, it would be more pedagogically sound, because that's how he speaks in our meetings. I'm just kidding. He's not like that. It would be a better idea to build the scaffolding for the lesson this way, or like if you change the word. So it's like, it's really amazing to have that new fresh set of eyes and to have someone that you can constantly talk to and gets what you're doing in your classroom.
And everybody has something that they're really good at that they're contributing. And
yeah,
let's be honest, it also splits the work up to a certain degree.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like this is the second year that we've been really collaborating regularly, and it's fantastic. So much easier than the first year.
Yeah, this is the first year I've really had somebody to work with AP Bio, which has been really nice. So working with another teacher at school that is teaching the same thing has been really nice. And it's very funny how we operate. We're very yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at how we assess our kids and we'll compare assessments, we haven't talked to each other, we'll just write them, and we look at how we assess, they're eerily similar.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yet we approach things from really different places, which is kind of cool. And that's, you know, it's been a learning experience for both of us, you know, because I tend to be a much more global kind of animal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my colleague is a little more linear, which mm-hmm. it's weird that a global thinking person end up attracted to science, but I think it's just because I like things that bleed.
Yeah.
I force myself to think linearly. It's not my inclination.
I don't think it's my inclination to think linearly either. I have a hard time with that. I like big picture a lot better.
Yeah, if I can't put something into a framework that's a big global thing to look at and say, look, the reason we're really learning this is this. I mean, for me, I as a student, I found it very difficult to learn if there wasn't context.
Yeah.
I hated the class where, especially, I hate to say it, it was math, where a math teacher would say, you need this because you need it for college. And I'm sitting there at 17 years old. College does not real, right? That's not real yet. So it's like, okay, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But when I had a chemistry teacher teach me stoichiometry, all of a sudden algebra made sense.
Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I remember from chemistry, stoichiometry. That's when I finally realized that, like, that different units cancel each other out.
Yeah.
And that's how you get the end result. Also,
The English over here is saying, Stoiki, what's your bit? Blah, blah.
We did this a lot.
These things I do not remember, nor do I need to.
I love it. We did this lab where, like, the end result was, like, if you put one drop of a solution in, it was clear, and then another drop, and it was pink, and that's how you knew you balanced
titrations.
It out. Titration. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You
should be on this all the time.
For the record, my favorite classes outside of science were, I loved English. In particular.
Yeah, I could kind
of
see.
I love to read. Of course, I would purposely go out of my way to figure out, you know, where's... I got a question for you, actually. I experienced quite a bit in my... Especially in high school, where teachers would teach literature from a perspective of there's a right way to interpret things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you buy into that, or do you allow kids the latitude to make a different a view of things based on their background?
I think that I do to a degree. I think a lot of times I'll tell kids, like, you know, there are certain opinions that we've decided are, like, not legitimate anymore. You know, like, I've certainly taught a somewhat, at least for the Bay Area, somewhat conservative-leaning group of kids at some point. And I've had students say, like, well, you need to show both sides of that. And sometimes I'll say to them, you know, I'm not going to show you the other side of slavery, or I'm not showing you the other argument for the civil rights. Sorry, we've decided as a you know, a group of people that side was wrong, and we're moving on. But sometimes I'll use that as an example of, you know, we're talking about social issues in my class sometimes, and then I'll tell them, you know, I'm going to show you other perspectives, but if I think that perspective is ridiculous or, you know, hurtful or something, then I'm just going to tell you that. But in terms of literature and having varying perspectives, yeah, I'm pretty open to it. I'll definitely tell them if they're completely off, but I'll tell them, you know, this is one thing people are thinking, and, you know, if I think they're kind of working around an idea, then yeah, we can consider it.
Well, some of it's just, you know, it's where a kid's coming from, you know, and it's, you know, I think sometimes it's the being Jewish thing does poke its head into how I learned sometimes, especially when it was, you know, dealing with literature that had a lot to do with Christianity, and I actually had to go study what that was, because I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea. So when, you know, my English teacher made me bring the Brothers Karamazov, and I wrote, I went on a tirade about the Inquisition and the Inquisitor, and she got very upset with me because of some of the things they said about Catholicism.
Well, I wouldn't have been that. Teaching American literature is actually really challenging for me, because there's so much that you have to teach them about Christianity and basically just like a lot of the things that this country was founded on and that still influence our policies and things like that. And sometimes they're just like, I'm so tired of reading this religious stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that. But you also need to sort of understand sometimes that we're a very young country, and these are things that continually influence us, and those are the people that these people came from, and it makes a lot of sense when you consider it from that perspective. That being said, absolutely, you know, they can say whatever they want in my class for the most part, and they know they're not going to offend me.
I didn't really read any. Like, so I grew up in a really Jewish town, and it wasn't until I was a senior and took a European history class that I learned anything about Christianity.
Yeah.
I really don't think my high school taught books that had a lot of biblical references.
Really?
Or they didn't teach us them.
See, I always just tell them.
Oh, that's interesting.
The major allusions are going to be to the Bible, Greek mythology, or Shakespeare, and then I tell them, why do you think that is? And then I tell them, because we're reading a bunch of old white dudes that were educated in that stuff.
That's fair.
You know, and then when we get past the old white dudes, I say, hey, does anybody notice that maybe we're starting to get some multicultural perspectives here? It's taken us a while to get there, but, you know, we get there.
So to turn this back where, you know, the collegial end of things is, do you get in those kind of conversations with your peers? You know, talk about why you're teaching what you're teaching and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It depends.
I do all the time. But, I mean, I think I also just kind of find those people at my school that they want to talk about it. And I'm actually teaching a senior class of, it's advanced composition in world lit. And I'm teaching a lot of sort of more modern things that have been, like, in the last 10, 15 years that are written. Teaching a lot of people that are not old white dudes, and my students are really responsive to it. They're really interested.
I think you should teach Margaret Atwood. I would be excited for you to do that.
I would be excited too. I have students right now, they're reading, they're doing like book circles, and they're all reading things from one of five countries, and they chose it too, and they're doing like Nigeria, Colombia, Syria, China, and of course I'm gonna forget the fifth one in the list, but so, you know, they're getting away from some Western lit, which is kind
of cool.
Yeah,
there's a lot of Eurocentric stuff.
Yeah, you just see it a lot in English. It can be pretty striking, I think, and history.
It is. So I'm doing an etiquette project with my freshmen right now, and I have a list of 99 countries that they can pick from, and they're broken up by region, and there's always like some sort of like aggressive words said across the room about how like only the cool countries are the European countries, and like they don't want to do any of the other ones, and I'm like, how boring are you?
Well, and then I mean, for me, that would be the point where I'd have a conversation about like, why do we think that? And
well, it's actually only one class this year had that. All my other classes were pretty diverse, so it was actually a transition away from previous years.
That's cool.
I know, I think my dream course would be to take a U.S. history course taught from a Native American perspective.
Oh. That would be awesome.
I think that would be very entertaining.
Yeah. I think that would be great. That's unfortunately not offered.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, we
if
know
I ever
writes...
get a chance to teach U.S. history again,
think
I will
about
do that.
What happened with the A push test last year, remember? It was not American enough.
Oh, yeah.
For, which
Colorado?
Southern? No.
Not American enough?
One of the southern states
it was a square middle
invalidated
state. Kansas.
Wow.
Maybe it was Kansas. They're always
Arkansas.
Up.
One of the middle states that is squared, not Colorado, definitely had some issues with the A push test. And they outlawed it as a state. Like, they voted that they would no longer teach AP US history in high schools.
Because it was not infused with enough, like, American ideals or something. Like, it was too critical of our history, basically.
Wow. It's not just science that gets banned in places. That's good to know.
Oh, yeah. History. There's a lot of very interesting things happening.
Yeah.
That's a trip.
Although California, the wonderful state we live in, we have a law that says that you have to teach LGBT history, which is really awesome. And
oh, that's
also
interesting.
We're required on September 17th to discuss the Constitution, which,
cool.
In case you wonderful people don't know, that is Constitution Day.
Nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to be good to know.
Yes. We can all celebrate next year.
I'm good with that.
Well, it was lovely to talk to you.
It's good talking with you guys, too.
I'm glad that we had a guest. And,
me, too. I'm curious. I guess we'll see. Maybe you can make more than one appearance.
What are you looking forward to this week?
Me? I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving is in another week.
Yeah, me, too.
No, actually, it's a lab-heavy week, so that's actually going to be really fun for me. I love labs. It's where tinkering is a blast.
Of course. I would imagine that's what I would be into, too.
I think I would like labs if... Maybe I'll come swing by and watch.
It's the grading of the labs, probably, that is not so.
Yeah,
fun.
Well, they're it's every part of it, right? no good deed goes unpunished.
So, what are you looking forward to this coming week?
I'm looking forward to. I like the short day before Thanksgiving. I just think it's a cute little fun day, and I'm actually kind of being mean. I'm giving a quiz.
Oh my gosh, I was gonna ask you, are you doing anything Thanksgiving related? Because I always think as a history teacher I would probably do something Thanksgiving related, but
I think that after I give my seriously it's 16 question quiz, I think I might show The Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, because it's really cute and I like to talk about all the things that are wrong with it.
Like, give me a couple of examples.
Just the overall, like, I don't know if it's a word, but cartoonization of Native Americans, and then also the Pilgrims and sitting down and what it was really like in colonial America, because it was nothing like, obviously, Charlie Brown.
Nice.
But I only saw that thing for the first time as an adult, so I think it's really cute.
Wait, do you mean like recently?
I mean, like, maybe 4 years ago.
Wow. So,
and it might not be called A Great Pumpkin. That's the Halloween one. It's called, I think
Charlie
it's just
Brown's
a
Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Oh, well, I would like to hear that, because I would also probably do something that's like, this is the true, what happened on the real Thanksgiving kind of a thing. But I don't have to do that this year because I get the entire week off, and I'm so excited, because guess
you
what?
You lucky lady.
I really need it, because... DeVolcin is real. I learned this year that there is like an acronym for the terrible, terrible experience of September, October, November for teachers.
And what does it stand for?
It stands for the dark, evil vortex of late September, October, and November.
And that's kind of perfect. We read on a blog that you should throw a party with your teacher friends.
And just,
On Friday, I went out with a bunch. We went for like a teacher happy hour, and it was beautiful. And it was really good. Also, by the way, ran into somebody from my first year of teaching. He is now 21. And
oh, you mean
I felt
student.
Really old. Oh, yeah, student. He worked at the place where we went.
Oh, wow. That is always so interesting. I have definitely run into some former students from like my first year student teaching that are now, 22, 23, 24. I actually have one who I'm friends with on Facebook who has a baby now.
Oh my god.
Which is also so strange.
That's crazy.
I guess they grow up eventually, right?
They do. It must have been the weirdest experience, because I wasn't the only teacher there he knew, but serving all of your teachers adult beverages. It has to be insane.
Probably, yeah. Or maybe having the tables turned of me having to be like the professional in the room, you know, like.
Yeah. No, he was a really good server. Oh, I'm sure he doesn't listen because he's not my Facebook friend, right. But he did a good job. Thank you.
Excellent. Maybe you had something to
do. I taught him well.
Right, exactly. You can take all the credit for that. All right, cool.
Absolutely.
Well, have a great Thanksgiving. Eat lots of turkey. I know you're kind of cooking your first Thanksgiving, right? I mean, your mom's maybe helping. I think you can.
My mom's helping, but I'm hosting my first one.
That's awesome. I will not be hosting. I will be going to eat my mom's turkey, but I will be enjoying it as well.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Tip my cap on a little